one of the implementers said something I thought was brilliant. He said, I don't think the integrator is more likely to identify it. I think the visionary feels it too, but I think the integrator is more likely to understand the downstream consequences of the issue in the relationship.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, the show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Clayton Stinson, not Stevenson. He is an innovator in the business coaching space. His focus is on helping visionary business owners and their second in commands develop strong communication skills, have an understanding and an appreciation for one another, and be able to leverage each other's strengths. His targeted program works to improve the adoption, implementation, and execution. There's a whole lot going on there of the Entrepreneurial Operating System, or EOS. Welcome to the show, Clayton.
Thanks for having me, Kenny. Really appreciate it. Looking forward to this.
Me too. This is one, listeners don't know, this is one of, I think, 37 conversations that we've had this week that were all scheduled. I don't know how it happened, but the Lord works in mysterious ways. So I'm excited to have, I think this is conversation number 35, and we still have half a day left. So it's going to be great. Clayton, tell us, what is on your mind?
Yeah, you know, I've been doing a lot of reflecting these days about my past relationships, you know, with visionaries that I've worked with, and just trying to figure out, you know, how to best support and help, you know, the second in command that's maybe struggling in that relationship. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what I'm thinking about is, you know, differences, right? And why we get so frustrated with people that are different from us, and how to overcome that. And so I've been reading a lot, you know, on conscious leadership and, you know, conflict resolution and, mm-hmm. you know, doing, you know, trying to understand Colby assessments and different types of assessments in a deeper way, and how I can, you know, how I can really help people to change, like you say, change the way that they think about mm-hmm. the situations that they're in. I've done a lot of the wrong things, a lot of the wrong ways at the start, you know, especially with my first visionary. So yeah, just really trying to process, you know, what I was thinking and how I should have approached it differently, and learning a lot, you know, from the clients that I'm supporting as well. And through that reflection, it's been really good season.
That's interesting. I mean, that's almost like a lifelong journey to start to understand those things. In the context of your work with that visionary integrator, visionary operator duo, what have you seen be that current thinking, that prevailing wisdom that is not working for folks and is leading you on this journey to find tools, assessments, or new mental models to help reframe the relationship? What's common right now?
Yeah, I'll approach it from both ways. I'll start with the visionary. I think quite often, I think the visionary, especially in a small growing company that's never had an integrator or operator before, you know, I think the prevailing thinking is that I need someone like me, right? Like, I want to hire people that are like me. And, you know, hiring someone that's not like me is frustrating, right? And I'll give you an example. I remember my first visionary that I worked with, we were very successful. It went really well. And years later, after I wasn't working with him anymore, he reached out to me. He's like, Clayton, I've got a new integrator that I want to hire in. You know, can you coach him? I'm like, yeah, sure, I can coach him. He's like, the only problem is, I just don't think he's visionary enough. And I started laughing, and I'm like, hey, what are you talking about? Like, we can work well together because I was visionary like you, right? Yeah. We worked together because I was the opposite, and we had a high level of trust, right? So I think it's easy to fall into that trap of, yeah, it is easier in the short run, you know, to hire someone that's more like you. But in the long run, it's not going to work. I joke about companies that have two or three visionary types. It's like, that's like a three-headed monster, right? Like you need, someone different than you. If you want to get to the next level, you need somebody who's going to challenge you, you know, who's going to, care about your business, but have a different perspective. And you need a variety of those types of people, at the table, at the leadership table. If everybody's the same on the leadership team, you're going to have problems. Right. So, I think that from the visionary perspective, that's probably their biggest challenge. From the integrator perspective or operator perspective, I'll just tell you what my perspective was with my first visionary was that I thought something was wrong with him. Something actually wrong with him. I wouldn't have probably said that out loud, but underneath there was this unhealthy judgment. Right.
Interesting.
And I think that happens when we don't understand people, right. When they're different from us, right. Is that, you can fill in the gaps, and rather than trying to understand him and appreciate him, I think there was this kind of underlying resentment, bitterness, that was not helpful and healthy for the relationship. Mm-hmm. And it undermined trust. So that's some of the stuff that I really coach people on now is like, where's your heart at with that?
Yeah.
With the visionary, right? Are you accepting them for who they are? And are you really appreciating, the gifts and abilities that they have? Or are you underneath critical, and judgmental, so on. So
that's really good. And the funny part on the visionary is like, I need them to be more visionary. It's like, well, there's a reason that the role is not called visionary number two, right?
Yeah.
And I think you said something important that I hope the listeners hear, which is the visionary needs to see the operator. This has to come from them, but they need to see them as someone who cares deeply about the business, but has a different perspective, and that the different perspective does not equal doesn't care or wants to take from.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like I've seen that. And that I know that can be really damaging, right? Mm-hmm. Because then there becomes, it does erode the trust that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And is it fair to say that trust is great and necessary in all levels of leadership and in all levels of business or nonprofits or anything? We have books called, Business at the Speed of Trust or, something goofy like that. But would you argue that the trust is more vital, more important and significant between that visionary and second in command than any other relationship in the organization?
Yes, absolutely. I would say that it's that relationship sets the tone, right? Like it's a model for everybody else on how they should live. Right. And how they should operate in the company. Right. So if there's dysfunction there or lack of trust, I always compare it to a marriage, right? Like if mom and dad are fighting, the kids know, they can tell. Right. And it shakes their, just comfort, like they're knowing that everything's going to be okay. Right. If mom and dad are fighting, like how do they know that everything's going to be okay? Mm-hmm. Like it's just so much uncertainty. Right. And I think it's the same in a company. If the visionary and second commander are fighting, like people can sense it and, they have there's uncertainty there. They don't know where to stand, but if it's a healthy model, then they'll learn. I just believe that people learn how to live based on, their leaders that are around them, right? Whether you like it or not, it's just reality.
So
it's our responsibility to be healthy. To work on ourselves, to grow, and to have a good relationship with our second in command or visionary, depending on the seat we're in.
Gotcha. You bring up something that I don't hear many people talk about, which is the instability in the organization that can stem from the visionary integrator operator, like not seeing each other in the best light, or really believing the best about the other. What are some of the tangible sort of trickle down effects that that sort of instability, or just having a maybe a contentious relationship at that level, what at the other levels of the organization might we expect to see? Because I'm thinking there's somebody listening and they're seeing stuff around, but they that doesn't feel right, might feel dysfunctional, and they're seeing the symptoms, but maybe they can't pinpoint the root cause, and maybe it is coming from here. So can you paint the picture of what some of those symptoms might look like that are actually coming from the visionary and the second in command?
Mm-hmm. I would say the first thing you might lose is L10 in the L10, or what do you guys call it? Weekly sync.
Weekly sync. Yeah.
Soul. You'll lose open and honest. You know, like you'll lose that ability for people to just be real, because that uncertainty will, you know, that the issue between them will kill that, right?
Like
I'm reading about conscious leadership right now, and I'm really liking it. It just talks about, you know, that I don't remember the word that you use, but just how any lack of integrity in any relationship, you know, and integrity may sound like a weird word to use in that situation, but unresolved issues is a lack of integrity, right? We're not dealing with whatever's going on. So I would say that's the first thing that goes. And, you know, and just, I think as anxiety comes in, like we're not at our best, right? When we are distracted by relationship issues, right? So I would say that, you know, people will be less present, you know, they're looking at, you know, how is this going to turn out? Like, is it going to be okay today? Like it's just a huge distraction, right? From being focused on the task at hand. I don't know what else I would add there, but I would think that would be the biggest thing you'd notice. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the team won't know, like outside of the leadership team, I think the rest of the team won't know why. Right. But they'll still sense it. Right. Like, you know, when we're fully present, like I always say that myself as a coach, like when I'm in a coaching situation, I am most effective when I'm not thinking about me at all. Right. Like me is gone. Right. If I'm coaching you, Kenny, it is all about you, Kenny. And I'm not self-conscious. You know, I'm not having self-doubt. I'm not, you know, I have to get out of that place and just be totally present. And people can't do that when there's relationship issues around them.
Yeah. It's sort of this distracting, like aneurysm, almost. Have you seen this cause, you know, silos or territorialism? Because I know that when people feel like their job or the security of their job could be threatened, like you said, open and honest in those leadership meetings starts to go, but have you seen it start to just erode like normal day-to-day open, honest communication, to where people are withholding some information to make sure that they stay valuable as a way to steady themselves? Like no matter what happens here, I'm proving my value, which it's a damaging belief. It's a false belief that's going to work. But have you seen it do that? Because I know that plagues a lot of people in, say, middle management and on down. You might start to see more of that.
Yeah, you know, I can't think of an example specifically because, you know, I'm usually engaged as a coach, so I don't necessarily see all the, you know, all the ins and outs of it. But I can definitely speak to, you know, if the integrator's new and the founder has stronger relationships, you know, I could see that could easily happen where people are positioning, you know, and trying to, you know, stay on the good side of the person who's the longest standing. Or if there's ever a merger, I'm dealing with a client right now who's a merger, and the the CEO of one company is the visionary now. The CEO of the other company that was acquired is the integrator now, and they're dealing with, you know,
wow. That's tough.
Some of that stuff. And, you know, I mean, it looks like probably going to be coaching the integrator, operator actually in this instance. And, you know, coaching her on how to navigate that, you know, how to build relationships with the people she doesn't know. You know, and it sounds like there's one person that may need to go, unfortunately, that isn't really coachable, within the leadership, that's causing a lot of problems. And this mm-hmm. doesn't apply to the visionary integrator, right? Like, it could apply to sales and ops leaders, or, you know, like, yeah. it's the same kind of concept, but the visionary integrator, I'd say, is more, you know, more crucial, but any of these relationship issues can yeah. do the same.
It's thing. Also more visible, right?
So yeah.
It's, yeah. You see it, feel the impact of it a little sooner.
Yeah.
What can, actually here, my question that came to my mind was, if there is this rift between a visionary and their second in command, where is the onus to repair the relationship, right? You know, as a foster parent and things like that, we get some training, which, honest to God, it should just be like business and relationships training. Like, it's just really good stuff. But one of the patterns that, like, my wife and I get taught is about rupture and repair. And rupture is not the end of the world. It's an opportunity to repair. And in some cases, there's like a strategic rupture that needs to happen so you can build the relationship back in a proper manner. Right. Sort of like, you know, like breaking a bone to set it correctly sort of thing.
Yeah.
How are you coaching your client duos on where that starts? Because when you get to pretty, you know, strong-willed, high achievers, driven individuals, they can say, like, well, I'm in the right. I've done this, and maybe I did this small thing, but like, it's on them to do this. Like, it's my company versus like, I'm trying to help you. You know, where do you get started on something like that?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it's a common issue. Like, recently I got referred to, a visionary integrator, and I met with the implementer and just said, hey, like, are they both open to coaching? And he said, no. I'm like, okay, well, pretty hard to do what I call marriage counseling if one person won't come to the table. Right. So, you know, I'll just tell a quick story back to the marriage example, cause I think there's so many overlaps. I was listening to a podcast the other day with my wife, and he was talking about this very thing, like how you can, you know, you can, get into this kind of cycle of battle, right? And like, how do you break out of it? And he said that, you know, somebody needs to humble themselves. Right. Like somebody mm-hmm. needs to stop, you know, and say, hey, you know what? I have a part in this. I'm sorry. You know, I did this and I shouldn't have done this or whatever. Right. And the question in the podcast was who should do that? Like, who should be the one okay. to humble themselves? You know, and he asked the crowd, and one of the people said, the husband should lead. Right. He should do that. Right. And someone else said the woman. And he said, no, the one that's more mature.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, right? And it was interesting because it's like,
now it's a competition.
Yeah, I want to be the one that's more mature, right? I want to be the one that's going to set the example. And I don't know, that just was a really good perspective. You know, you shouldn't use that as a prideful thing, right? But somebody just needs to own it, right? Somebody needs to be like, you know what, this isn't working. It's not good for our company. We need help. We need to, you know, I think you need somebody external, right, to help you see things for what they are. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. I had a client this summer who, you know, I was coaching him, just the integrator. And I think it was like week two, he's like, Clay, my visionary is driving me nuts. And I said, okay, tell me about it. And he told me about it a bit, and, you know, and I coached him a little bit and just said, you know what, you can't change him, right? But you can change your approach. And I said, is there any approach that you're taking with him that you think you could change or improve? And he's like, yeah, he's like, I use my intellect to attack when I don't get what I want. And I'm like, okay, you need to stop that. Right. Like that's not cool. And so he actually went to his visionary that week and he apologized. He said, hey, you know what? I use this to attack you and it's not fair and I need to stop. And I'm sorry, I'm going to work on that. And the visionary was like shocked and then owned. Like, I don't know about you, but with my wife, if I humble myself, right, and apologize for something that I did, like truly apologize, not like say sorry and then justify it after, right? Like truly, truly own it. Usually, like almost every time, she will then apologize too, right? And own her part in it, right? And I think that's where this starts. And another thing I'll just share, which is powerful. I had Don Tinney, the original EOS integrator, on one of my webinars recently. Fantastic guy. I've met him a few times. And he said, the thing I appreciated most about Gino Wickman is if there was ever an issue from one of our conversations that he didn't feel like was resolved, when he was driving home, he would call me. And he'd say, Don, I just don't feel peace about that interaction. You know, can we talk about it and resolve it? And he said, we never let anything like that last. Right. Like we dealt with it right away.
That's incredible, but that's not the typical, right? If it was, you and I probably would not have jobs, or businesses.
Yeah,
that's fantastic. You know, if your wife wants to call my wife about the whole like admitting to her fault thing, like maybe we could. No, I'm just kidding. My wife's like, yeah, exactly. You were wrong. She's fantastic. And I'd be a lot more terrified if I thought she would ever listen to any of my podcasts. So, so just shoot. We're honest here on the How Leaders Think podcast. We're just bringing the heat, unfiltered, unvarnished. I don't know how many of you are varnishing the truth, but it's unvarnished here. So, sorry, the rabbit, like, I have these facilitation animal. I should probably send you a box of these, Clayton. You'd enjoy them, but it's these little animals, like an elephant. Like, let's talk about the elephant in the room. There's one that's a squirrel. I think I need just a box of squirrels.
You need one around your neck on a chain or something.
Yeah, that's going to be, I'm going to put it right next. Like, I have my faith and then my personality side by side. There's so much to unpack here. We could probably do an entire series, and maybe that should be a concept for us to pursue in conversation 38 or 39. But I love that the concept that guy put forward is whoever is more mature. And one of the things that comes to mind, actually a couple of them that are tools that I've been pursuing and testing out and seeing some good early results, things like the empowerment dynamic, where you talk about the drama triangle and are we focused on the problem or are we focused on the outcome? So I've done, you know, part of what I offer in addition to the system and soul stuff, it is similar to you in that I'll end up coaching maybe a visionary operator duo, just especially if they're new, you know, that can be a really new concept. Even in EOS, you know, right? Like companies that are fresh into that, they're like, what's this integrator thing? And how does it work? And just saying, hey, what's the outcome you both want? Let's focus on that. Oh, okay. If that's what we want, we're actually in and far more unity than it appears. But because we got sideways with each other, neither one of us owned it. We now have this narrative, this story that we're replaying in our head about, Clayton's just, he's just stuck in his ways. He doesn't see the value. He just wants to do what he wants to do, like whatever it may be. And instead of pausing, you know, apologizing if you own your part, but also saying, well, what do we actually have a shared outcome? Are we trying to get to the same destination? And to your point earlier, just having a different perspective, like are we both just super passionate about this organization and its success? And we've chosen to hold our opinions with a closed hand instead of an open hand. So things like that, things like the Enneagram, which I think are great for just like deep interpersonal. There's some team elements that can apply there, but just for some deep interpersonal. So I do encourage people, you know, find something that number one can help you work on yourself. So you heard Clayton say, you know, his advice a lot of times is, well, we can't change that other person, but we can change ourselves. And I'm curious with that, because sometimes that can come with some feelings of hopelessness, right? Like marriage counseling and only one spouse is coming to the meeting sort of thing. But I don't think I heard you say that it's not the maximum impact, but it's not ineffective and not worthwhile. Is that accurate?
Yeah, no, it still can have a big impact, right? Like, you know, think about it. Like if you're frustrated with your wife or husband and you've told them, you know, I wish you would not do this anymore. And then one day they stop. Right? Like one day they change because they started looking in the mirror and recognizing, then all of a sudden you're like, what's going on? Right? Like what's going on with you? Right. So, I think, you know, there can be, you know, a huge impact for that. So, and I'll just go back to my client this summer. You know, I told him, you know, I was coaching him on how to change his approach to his relationship. And a couple of weeks after that, the visionary called me and he's like, Clayton, whatever you're doing with Sean, you know, is working. Can you coach us? Can you coach us together? Cause our relationship is better than it was. Right. And that was, I didn't talk to him at all, but he could see that something was changing in his integrator. So then I coached them together for 7 weeks and, it's really had a big impact. Right. So, that's and it's pretty common. I think, you know, and this is my integrator bias, you know, and I have to be careful that I don't go there. I'm more naturally an integrator. So in my coaching, I have to make sure that I stay unbiased. But I remember at one point I was like, it seems like the integrator is always the one that identifies the problem between them. Like, and is always like, man, there's just something not right in my relationship. I wish it was better. I don't know what to do about it. I hear integrators complaining a lot. And I was talking to some implementers about it. And I said, do you think, you know, the integrator is more likely to identify this as an issue and, you know, or to see that it's an issue. And one of the implementers said something I thought was brilliant. He said, I don't think the integrator is more likely to identify it. I think the visionary feels it too, but I think the integrator is more likely to understand the downstream consequences of the issue in the relationship. Wow. Right. And I was like, that's interesting. Right. Because integrators are system focused, logic process. Like they're thinking like down the line, if we don't get this fixed, it's going to be an issue. Whereas I think the visionary sometimes is just too busy, right? They don't think about the implication, right, of things, right? They're just more going for it and, you know, trying to figure things out on the fly. And so I find that a lot of integrators come to me for help and their visionary maybe doesn't recognize, you know, that there's, you know, I guess not the urgency of it. Right.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. Cause if they, you know, they're system minded, they know, like you said, the implication of if this cog over here is malfunctioning a little bit, how does that input this widget down here? Mm-hmm. And at a certain scale, it's by design that the visionary isn't a part of all the cogs and widgets and the intricate detailed pieces. It's usually not their skill set, not their gifting, right? Or working genius, what have you. I would say, because, you know, sometimes just because I have been and still am a second in command for my church. So I've been one in an agency after I sold mine, but I've been the visionary too. So I, like you, I try to remain neutral. It's like, I see both sides. Let me help you blend this together. But I think some of that comes from there is a power dynamic at play in that the visionary usually doesn't have somebody to answer to. Now you may end up with a board or something like that, but especially if they're the founder, that takes on a different, it looks different than when you have like a second, third, fourth generation CEO, right?
Yeah.
And you see them where they say, well, we'll just figure it out as we go. We'll build the ship while we're sailing it. Or, well, so long as it doesn't stop me from doing what it is I want to do and I think we should be doing, you know, we'll hire other people. Like, they're not replaceable. For them, that there is no plan B.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that can become a blindness, in my opinion.
Definitely.
Well, these other people don't have an equity stake in this venture. Therefore, they can develop a plan B if you act like a jackwagon for long enough. Now, sometimes second in commands act like jackwagons too. I'm not here to, vilify visionaries and you know, give a halo effect to integrators. It takes two to tango, as some would say. I prefer more of a ballroom dancing, but that's whatever. We've been watching Dancing with the Stars. It's my daughter's really into it, so it's top of mind. But the part that I'd be curious to hear your take and your experience on is what does it look like working with a visionary between being a founder visionary and, you know, that second, third, fourth, you know, doesn't necessarily have to be like a family member that took over, but how is the flavor of the interaction different there? And what could you maybe advise a listener, a leader, to be aware of so that they can approach it with a more nuanced perspective?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I know how you said one of the things you said was they don't report to anybody, like they're not accountable to anybody. Well, in my opinion, if you want to have a good company, a successful company, I think that there has to be a level of humility in mm-hmm. the visionary to allow the integrator or operator to hold you accountable.
100%. Yeah.
And if you are, you know, not willing to do that, you're never going to have a good relationship, right? Because the integrator operator is going to be frustrated, right? Because you're not allowing them to speak into your life. And, you know, for example, I have a client right now who, you know, the visionary missed the L10 2 weeks in a row. And he told me, you know, like, it sucks when he's not there. And I said, well, you need to talk to him, right? Like, put it on the issues list. Like, right now, put it on your issues list, same page meeting, you know, L10 attendance. And you need to talk to him, right? Because if you need him there, you need to say something about it, right? And he did. And, you know, that visionary is awesome. Like, he's a friend of mine. And, you know, he responded well. And he's like, yeah, sorry. Yeah, I know. You're right. I need to be there, right? It's the most That's important great. Meeting for my team each week, and I need you to, you know, you need that, right? The visionary needs that voice of reason type mm-hmm. person in their life. Particularly if they don't have a coach, you know, like they should have, I think every visionary should have a coach of some kind that's speaking life into you and challenging you at, you know, not just allowing you to go down the rabbit mm-hmm. trail or whatever direction you want to go. Like, we all should have, you know, should have a coach.
I agree. And everybody should just go to the unityguide.com and you can make that happen.
Yeah. And I don't mean it in that way. Like, I, you know, it's just like, you know,
no, I agree. What the three things I have come to see, and I'm actually building a sermon or message for my foster family camp next week, around this concept. But every successful leader and he's one of the co-founders of System and Soul, Chris White. I know a lot of people in the EOS community know him, mm-hmm. but he talks about you need a framework, you know, some guiding principles. You need a peer group. So people, sort of travelers for the journey that can hold you accountable and help you and encourage you. And then you need a coach. And he says, I've never met any, I mean, he's worked with like billion-dollar companies and everything, and, you know, down to $1 million. Like he's helped so many people. And he says, every really successful person I've seen and leader has those three things. So I think you're 100% like spot on, you know, whether they get you, they get me, they get somebody else, but
it doesn't matter. Like
you can't really argue with
right?
People like, with coaches versus people without like what their success and their growth rate is. Cause it doesn't, wouldn't you say it accelerates their ability to realize their potential?
Cause we all have blind spots.
Oh, for sure.
Right. And here's the biggest advice for visionaries. The danger is everyone might be intimidated by you. Like you may not feel like you're intimidating, but everyone most likely in your organization is intimidated by you. And they
you're
will
stepping on my toes.
They will not challenge you, most likely. Not all the time. Like if you have people in your organization that will challenge you, you don't realize how blessed you are. Right. But I've experienced so many organizations where the visionary will never get challenged. Right. And somebody that's employed by you might never challenge you, but your coach will. That's like we've all got blind spots. Like I look back at my first engagement with a visionary, you know, before I even knew about EOS, like I had so many blind spots. Like now I know, now I see it. And it's like, oh man, if I would have approached that way. You know, if I would have, you know, this, if I would have that,
right?
Like I can see it now because I see it in my clients now, right? It's like, oh man, like I got to look in the mirror on that, right?
So, something that we don't have time to delve into, but would recommend for people is looking at the four stages of psychological safety. And that four, because they all build on, upon each other: inclusion, learning, contributor safety. The final one is challenger safety, and it's that safe. And in that model, psychological safety is defined as a culture of rewarded vulnerability. And I think challenging the senior most authority in the organization is more of an act of vulnerability than defiance or disrespect or anything, but you really open yourself up. And do you think that's predominantly why these senior most leaders are not being challenged, even when it's glaringly obvious that we're missing something or they are?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would say, you know, most visionaries will say that I wish people would challenge me more, but then like you said,
they'll punch them in the face when they're
challenged, they don't receive it well. Right. And it's like, well, you can't have it both ways.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I heard a great quote. I've been consuming a lot of Alex Hormozi's content, you know, podcasts and different things like that. But he said something on two consecutive podcasts this week that I listened to, and is especially for business owners, business leaders, you can't have both control and freedom at the same time. Man, I mean, that pegged me between the eyes.
Yeah.
And especially as I think about the, not just for myself, but the people I work with, is if you're a leader, I want more people to challenge me. And so that you can start to relinquish control of different pieces and get the freedom you want. But I think leaders need to make that choice between control and freedom. And if you want control, and that's how you, and that's the place you act from, I don't think you're going to get very many people who want to or are inclined to challenge you, because there's not a benefit to them on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you want control, just stay small, right? Like, because that's the only way you can have control, right? As if you have less people to be around.
Yeah.
Right. But if you want
to choose to be the chief everything officer.
Yeah. But you're going to have five staff probably for the rest.
Yeah. And massive headaches, and there's a whole host of things. Well, we have discussed a great many things. I love all these things because obviously we're in similar businesses with some similar backgrounds for a reason. So I'm sure that we could have a Joe Rogan-esque 3-hour conversation, but I think people would tune out probably after the second hour. But if somebody was wanting to take some initial steps towards the things we talked about of especially those in that visionary second in command relationship to just gain awareness, to improve the relationship, improve themselves, what are some free or nearly free steps that they could take in 24 hours?
Yeah, I just launched a YouTube channel here about 4 weeks ago, and Kenny,
which will link up.
Kenny is going to be on it shortly, but that's one way, you know, it's just interviewing experts like Kenny about things they're passionate about that are relevant for companies trying to run on a business operating system.
Well done. Well done.
Such as System and Soul. And then, you know, on LinkedIn, I'm very active on LinkedIn. It's probably the best way to reach out to me, or you can go check out my website. There's a free consultation book button on there. You can just book a call and have a chat and see if I can help.
Absolutely. Well, Clayton, thank you so much for being on the show. I'm confident this will not be the last time, if history and our calendars are any indication. So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, sharing your time.
Thanks.
Thank you to everybody who's a listener. I do want to encourage you to, if you like this, you know, give us a 5-star review, subscribe, smash that subscribe button. I don't know. I heard somebody say that once and it sounded weird and I thought I'd try it out, but I appreciate you more than you know. And remember, until next time, change how you think, you'll change how you lead. We'll see you.